Chapter 20. To the Heart of the Matter. A strident nightmare summoned through an obsidian figurine, Jarlaxle pulled up on a high rocky bluff, looking down at the decrepit keep known as Thornhold. A few moments later, Zachnephane came bouncing up beside him, riding a summoned hellboar identical to the one that belonged to the very dwarf they were trying to find.
"You could not do better than this for an old friend?"
an obviously rattled Zachnephane asked, trying to catch his breath after the bouncing journey. "I probably could," Jarlaxle conceded. "But these items come at great expense, and time was a factor. If it makes you feel better, Gromp himself crafted the one you ride."
"You paid him to make this for me?"
"No, no, it was to be a gift to Ambergris, Athrogate's bride upon their return." Zachnephane nodded, then looked past his friend.
"That is the place?"
Jarlaxle, staring down at the old keep, gave a little nod.
"A million pieces of gold for that?" Zachnephane scoffed. "I am not versed in the prices on the surface world, but I could find a better use for such a grand sum in Menzo Berenzon, I expect."
"And that is the heart of the problem," Jarlaxle said. He dismounted and spoke a command word, reverting his pawing, fire-snorting steed to a tiny obsidian figurine once more. Zachnephane was all too happy to hop off the uncomfortable hellbore, and Jarlaxle dismissed it, too. "We'll wait for nightfall," Jarlaxle explained, and he led the way down into a small dell among the stones, out of sight of the keep, but with a grand view of the rolling waters of the stormy Sword Coast.
"You seem especially dour this day," Jarlaxle mentioned as they shared an afternoon meal.
"Although I must admit, it is difficult to tell with you, since that does seem to be your humor."
"Or lack of," Zachnephane replied. But he growled at his own pun before Jarlaxle could possibly take that as a sign of any positive mood change.
"What is it? You have met your son once more. I would think such an event..." Zachnephane didn't look up.
"And his bride, a most wonderful woman," Jarlaxle continued, measuring his words as carefully as he was studying Zachnephane. He caught a hint of a grimace there, and so pressed on. "His wife, who was with the grandchild of Zachnephane."
Then Zachnephane did look up, unblinking.
"They were not happy to see you?" Jarlaxle asked.
Zachnephane shrugged.
"Pleased enough, I expect."
"But you were not so happy to see the changes," Jarlaxle reasoned.
"I didn't say any such thing."
"Your son married a human.
You are ever a fount of information."
"Your grandson will be of half-human blood." Zachnephane slammed his bowl down and glared at the mercenary.
"So?" said Jarlaxle.
"That's all you have to say about it? Any of it? Or am I to be blessed with a soliloquy of sorrow by Jarlaxle for my failing?"
"Failing?" Jarlaxle echoed.
"You float about these other creatures as if you were born to their mothers," said Zachnephane.
"I was not the one who escorted a band of bedraggled halflings out of the Underdark at great personal risk," Jarlaxle reminded him.
"I was not the one who almost killed Drizzt when I thought he had murdered an elven child in a surface raid."
Zachnephane shook his head, muttered something unintelligible. He scooped up his fallen bowl and went back to his meal.
"You accuse me of judging you," Jarlaxle quipped.
"Someone at this meal is certainly doing so."
"Just shut up, and do keep in mind that I'd rather be riding your nightmare than this stupid pig."
"I'm not trading."
"Then shut up."
Jarlaxle said no more and went back to his own meal. He understood Zachnephane's trepidation here, of course. It was one thing to free pathetic halflings, and quite another to have his grandson be of mixed blood. He glanced up from his bowl to consider his old friend. He could see the pain there, the confusion, the anger, and knew that there was nothing he could say to make anything better. Zachnephane's feelings were Zachnephane's to own, and thus only one person could resolve them, or not. The afternoon passed quietly, until the sun dipped low in the western sky, its last rays shining across the water, bright in drow eyes.
"How can you even look at it?" remarked Zachnephane, discomfort under the daytime glow etched across his squinting face.
"It was very difficult at first, because it offended my drow senses," Jarlaxle replied.
He paused a moment, and indeed, Zacnaphane snapped a glare his way, catching the inference.
"But I grew used to it, and so it did not hurt for long," Jarlaxle went on. "Then, to my surprise, I grew quite fond of it, to the point where I actually prefer its warmth and shine to the cold darkness of the Underdark. Though I suppose, as I ponder, that I quite like both, which gives me the best of both worlds to enjoy."
"You're not half as clever as you think you are," Zacnaphane remarked.
"Or twice as clever as I ought to be," Jarlaxle added with a grin. "I have been told that my wit will be my end."
"At least you'll die smiling, for no one finds Jarlaxle as amusing as Jarlaxle finds himself, because no one is quite as smart as he is to truly understand him."
They let it go at that, for the westering sun began to sink below the watery horizon. As the shadows lengthened, they crept out of the dell and made their careful way toward the place called Thornhold. Both studied the ground around them with every step, inching forward and looking for clues of, well, anything. The main entrance of the place was apparent, and there seemed only one logical approach. So if Athrogate and Ambergris had made it to Thornhold, Jarlaxle was confident that he was now retracing the exact last steps of their journey. As they neared the gates, they came upon a scene of great interest. Even in the dimness of twilight, they could see dark stains on the broken stones, including some that looked almost like bubbled black goo.
"Blood," Zacnaphane signed, bending low to sniff one dark stain. "And not so old."
"I know this stain," Jarlaxle's hands responded, looking at a puddle of the black ooze.
"Demon remains."
The Hunsrens had admitted to Zacnaphane that they had been selling gemstones in the region, and that House Margaster had become a favored client of Chari Hunsren. The dots were all aligning here, and given the absence of Athrogate and Amber, connecting to Jarlaxle's dismay, the two drow stayed low and moved for the cover of a pair of tilted stones. And not a heartbeat too soon, for even as they arrived, they heard a telltale clicking sound. Only their natural abilities, coupled with their vast experience and warrior training, sent both into diving roles for the nearest cover, as a crossbow quarrel sparked, skipping off the stone between them. They looked to the wall and gates. A torch appeared above them, then a second, and a few moments later a fiery missile soared out, landing on the stone and there somehow still burning. More followed, landing in a strategic pattern to light up the entire area near where the two drow crouched.
"Here, ye skulking dogs," came the call from the wall. "Show yourselves. Show your faces and be counted, or show your arses and be shot running away."
"Counted by dwarves or by demons?" Zacnaphane signed to Jarlaxle.
"Yes," came the answer.
"We are emissaries from Luskin," Jarlaxle called out. "Come to speak with the new owners of Thornhold."
"Who were the old owners of Thornhold?"
"What business has the City of Sails so far down the coast?"
"Not so far for a ship," Jarlaxle replied.
"We ain't seeing your sails,"
a different dwarf from the wall yelled back.
"If you truly understand Luskin, when you see us you will understand," Jarlaxle said cryptically. "There are the open powers of the city, and then—"
He let it hang and looked to Zacnaphane, signing.
"They've surely heard whispers of Jarlaxle."
"In Jarlaxle's mind, everyone speaks of him constantly," Zacnaphane signed back. That brought a wide smile to Jarlaxle's face, despite their precarious position here, for the relentless Zacnaphane would not surrender his sarcastic wit, even when speaking with his fingers. It occurred to Jarlaxle then that this irreverent, grousing drow was quite similar to another of his closest friends. He couldn't believe that he hadn't made that connection before. But the two spoke with the same voice, and they both so virulently hated the world in which they were trapped that it pleased them to stain their blades with the blood of those whom they believe oppressed them or did great wrongs to innocence. Jarlaxle's other friend was human, which was probably why Jarlaxle hadn't seen them in similar light until now, because, superficially at least, it was hard to equate the world of men to that of drow. Jarlaxle should have known better, though. Human kings or lords or landowners or, well, just humans were quite capable of being every bit as vicious as the worst of Lolth's priestesses. Still, he was glad to have at least one of them by his side right now, for both the steadfast companionship and the ability to take care of the business at hand.
"Then show yourselves!" the dwarf yelled, interrupting this revelation.
Jarlaxle motioned for Zacnaphane to stay low, then brought forth his newest acquisition, a small circular wooden base with a group of feathers pinned flat atop it. Jarlaxle pulled them out and set them upright in four holes cut precisely for the feathers' shafts, equidistant around the circle's perimeter. He whispered, "Akati," the name of the supreme aerial being of Toril, a goddess controlling air elementals. Immediately the feathers began to wave, then to spin, and the inner disc of the wooden base similarly spun. The motion and the magic created a vortex above the wooden base, climbing up into the air. Holding the item before him, Jarlaxle stood up from behind the stone.
"Myself, you mean," he called to the dwarf.
A crossbow clicked, and a quarrel sped from the wall. Jarlaxle didn't flinch. He couldn't see the quarrel, though he had heard the release. He did catch sight of it at the very last instant as it bore down upon him, nicking off the angled stone right before him and skipping up at his face. The vortex caught it, though, as designed, and flung it harmlessly aside.
"Your next lie'll get a better shot, elf," the dwarf on the wall called. "We're knowing how to count to two."
"You assail friends of House Hunsrin," Jarlaxle dared call out. "Would that please Lord Neverember, do you believe?"
A long silence slipped by, with no response from the wall. Jarlaxle had taken a great risk here, he knew, and had tipped a big part of his hand. He didn't know where else to take this conversation, however, and figured that the chance of getting to Athrogate and Ambergris was worth the cost of a bit of his leverage.
"Yourself and your friend come in," the dwarf called.
Jarlaxle looked to Zacnaphane, who emphatically shook his head, echoing Jarlaxle's feelings on the matter.
"After that warm greeting, perhaps it would be best if you came out to us, initially at least," he called back.
"He came to see us, so come in and see us," the dwarf bellowed.
"Better out here," Jarlaxle steadfastly replied.
"I'm fast to grow tired of asking."
"Then don't weary yourself, good dwarf," Jarlaxle called back. "Come out here that we might speak of glorious things to come."
Another long silence followed, and all the torches along the wall went dark. Jarlaxle looked to Zacnaphane and shrugged, and both watched the door.
"Here we come, elf,"
came a shout a short while later, and so they did, but not through the door. With a great buzzing sound, a horde of man-sized insect-like creatures, resembling some grotesque cross between a housefly and a human, swarmed over the wall. The buzzing became a purposeful drone, and though they were elven, and so immune, both drow recognized the magical lullaby qualities of the wing song. Zacnaphane, however, slumped down to the ground. Jarlaxle glanced at him only once, not sure if he was afflicted or faking, but having no time to consider the implications, he gripped the wooden base of his item tighter and sent his will into it, demanding more from the magic. He counted a dozen of the demons and knew them as Kazmes, too many he knew for two warriors.
"Don't get stabbed," he warned Zacnaphane, who lay unmoving.
For Jarlaxle knew that a wound from a Kazmes needle-like proboscis would keep bleeding for a long, long time. Jarlaxle fell back. He wanted to reach for his nightmare, to bring it forth and ride away, but he discovered then that he couldn't let go of his new toy with either hand, for it was spinning furiously now, and any tilt or wobble would send it flying from his hands. Of course, he also had no idea what it was doing or why it was spinning so furiously. A globe of magical darkness fell over him, and not one of his or Zacnaphane's doing. He wasn't surprised, though, and he didn't flee. Fully committed now, he just threw all his will into the magical item in his hands. He couldn't see it, but he could definitely feel it and hear it, a great groaning whirlwind of power. The buzzing grew much louder as a demon suddenly dove for him, then another. He instinctively fell back and tried to angle his toy to intercept. The buzzing became a thwopping sound, accompanied by human-like screeches, then groans as the pair caught in Jarlaxle's tornado began tumbling and spinning and crashing together. Needing to see it, Jarlaxle backed out of the darkness fully, and there they were, two, then three demon creatures caught in the vortex. And it was indeed a tornado, a mighty cyclone, but controlled, spinning tightly, battering the demons as it held them in its rotational grip. the immediate threat to himself over, he looked at Zacnafane, only to see a pair of Kazmes dive in for the kill. With no way to get near his friend, Jarlaxle summoned a globe of darkness over Zacnafane and hoped for the best. Zacnafane had never battled this type of demon before, but he had surely fought enough drow in his years to feel no surprise when magical darkness engulfed him. It might have even been Jarlaxle throwing the spell, he figured, in some attempt to shield him. No matter, he heard the demons coming well enough, judging their distance from the sound of their buzzing insect wings, and trusted that they thought him an easy kill. He pulled his whip from his hip as he rolled and snapped it up into the air, calling upon its powers to cut a line in the multiverse, a fiery tear now hidden in the magical darkness. Rolling quickly, he went back over, gathered his feet under him, and dove away, taking some grim satisfaction when he heard a shrieking demon smash into the ground behind him. A second turned with remarkable speed just above the darkness globe, however, and sped right for him. He didn't bother with the planar rift power this time, just snapped his whipcord tightly around the giant mosquito-like proboscis and yanked it down and to the left across his body. The Kazmay's head jerked down, giving Zacnafane a great view of its shocked insectoid eyes, just as the weapon master's left cross brought his sword slicing across them. Zacnafane slid aside while the Kazmay crashed down and tumbled over and over and over, bouncing and breaking. "What in the nine hells?" he muttered in disbelief, watching Jarlaxle rushing his way, bearing a tornado? Whatever it was highly effective. The mercenary caught a fourth demon in the swirl, then a fifth, and the rest flew in every direction, some caught in the effects of the vortex, others clearly trying to swing wide of the powerful magic. Howling from the wall caught the attention of the two drow, and the distant gate burst open, and a pack of canines, hellhounds, of course, leaped forth. The mounts, Jarlaxle cried, but he needn't have, for Zacnafane already had his hellboar statuette on the ground, calling to it. And recognizing Jarlaxle's predicament, the weapon master grabbed the pouch from his companion's belt and dumped the other obsidian steed to the ground. With a great roar, Jarlaxle swung his arms left, then jerked them back to the right, and the five spinning demons went flying from the cyclone, thrown like tumbleweeds. With their gossamer fly wings torn off in the cyclone, they couldn't recover, and so they tumbled long and high, crashing down to smash against the stones. Neither drow saw it, for they were well on their way, driving Nightmare and Hellboar with all speed, hooves clicking against the stone, lighting fires and trailing black smoke. But they heard the sickening sound, and that was enough to make Jarlaxle shudder. Long and hard they rode, hellhounds wouldn't tire, but neither would the magical mounts, which were faster, and the pursuit eventually faded.
"Good to be home, elf,"
King Brunner said to Drizzt, when the drow ranger unexpectedly appeared at Brunner's court in Gauntlegrim.
"My home is wherever I would find Catti Bree," Drizzt corrected. "Today I am visiting the house of my brother."
"Ha ha, good enough then, and glad to have ye. So much afoot, I'm betting that stupid Never-Ember is up to little good and no good, and might not be in that order."
"Do tell," the drow prompted.
"Not much to tell yet," Brunner replied. "Seems that Never-Ember sold a tower to some dwarves, Stoneshaft clan, down the coast. Rumblebelly seen it. Smelling like Never-Ember's burying ill-gotten gold, and I'd be happy as a gnome with a widget or a halfling with a pie to be the one catching him at it."
"I presume that relations between Gauntlegrim and Neverwinter City have not improved."
"Ha! The man's a fool!"
Drizzt nodded and let it go. He had come here in the hopes of using Brunner's newly activated teleportation gates to get to Mithril Hall and the Silver Marches. He wanted to buy something from Silvery Moon for Catti Bree, to commemorate the birth of their first child. He had a particular piece in mind, one that he had seen at Lady Illustrial's palace. The last thing he needed now was to get enmeshed in some nonsense between Lord Never-Ember and Brunner, two of the most stubborn and headstrong people he had ever known. At that moment, however, he happened to glance to the side at Ivanel, who was also at court that day, and her fingers fast flashed him the message, "There is much more."
"Do I still have my room, or did you sell it to some traveling merchant?" Drizzt asked, and Brunner howled.
"Two, if you're wanting them. Nine hells, ten! And more above in bleeding vines!" Brunner roared.
"Regis is in town?"
Not for knowing. He's been out and about many the 10 days.
Drizzt bowed to take his leave.
We're sharing mutton and ale tonight, eh?
Brunner asked, and Drizzt readily agreed. He left the court and meandered in the nearby halls for a bit until Ivanel joined him, and the two went together to the entry cavern of Gontalgrim, to the tram that would take them up to Bleeding Vines. They couldn't have a private conversation in Gontalgrim, after all, where every ear was Brunner's ear. Drizzt had ridden this tram many times and was never left less than amazed by the journey back to the surface. Coming down into the mountain was normal enough, a train of cars rolling down the tracks to the entry cavern of the Dwarven complex, where a series of breaks and rises stopped the momentum and placed the train at the station on a high platform, just before the underground pond and the gates of Gontalgrim beyond. The ride back to the surface, however, was a feat of engineering and magic as grand as anything Drizzt had ever known, including the web balconies of Chedna Saad. The tram rolled down from the platform, it crossed the cavern, propelled again by simple gravity. But when it got to the steep incline, it rolled over with the tracks, upside down to the ceiling. Except that wasn't upside down at that point, because Gromf Beanri and some other powerful wizards had reversed the gravity all the way back up the mountain. The tram would then fall up the mountain, rolling back to the floor before exiting at the Bleeding Vines station. Ivanel was clearly not as entranced by such a feat, though, because barely off the tram, she took Drizzt by the arm and pulled him aside. And there, away from any eavesdroppers, she informed him that Regis had left town once more, moving back to infiltrate Neverember's court in Neverwinter City.
"He was the one who witnessed the sale to Clan Stoneshaft," she explained, "in that very chamber, and Regis was the one who made the connection to House Margaster of Waterdeep, though there are more connections he could not know."
Drizzt cocked an eyebrow at that.
"To House Hunzrin," Ivanel explained.
She told him then of the money-washing of Athrogate and Ambergris, who had gone off to Thornhold, and of Jarlaxle's fears that there might be even more nefarious characters afoot.
"I would expect this to come from Jarlaxle, not you," Drizzt admitted,
making it clear that he still wasn't quite sure of this strange woman before him.
"He isn't here," Ivanel answered. "He and Zacnaphane went to find the missing dwarves."
"Missing?"
"They have been gone a long while," Ivanel explained. "Perhaps they are drunk at the table of Clan Stoneshaft, celebrating a new dwarf kingdom in the region. But they went there to look for crimes, and they have not returned. With everything else we've been able to put together, it's hard not to think something untoward has befallen them."
"How long?"
2 10-days.
"And Jarlaxle?"
"He left only a couple of days ago, but he is riding his
nightmare.
And a hellbore for Zacnaphane. I expect they are even now at Thornhold, or already on their way back."
Drizzt reflexively looked to the south and west.
"There's only one road," Ivanel said, and it sounded very much like a suggestion.
Drizzt walked around the far side of the tram station, behind a mountain spur and out of sight of Bleeding Vines. He had meant to go to Silvery Moon, as he had told Brunner, but now that seemed ill-advised. He thought to go back to the tram, down to the Dwarven portal, where he could be teleported back to the Ivy Mansion in Catti Bree. He would have liked to have her insight into these alarming developments. He could go, speak with her, and be back here in a matter of hours. But then he looked to the south and scolded himself for his previous thoughts. They were just delays. He knew that in his heart. His road lay before him, a road where 3 of his friends had gone, likely into danger, along with a 4th, his father.
His father.
Drizzt wasn't sure what that meant, his confidence regarding Zacnaphane's character thoroughly shaken by the man's prejudices. On a rational level, he told himself that he shouldn't be surprised. This was also new and shocking to Zacnaphane, after all, whose life had been lived wholly within the bounds of Menzo Baranzon. Yet, he looked back to the east, where, far beyond sight, lay the Ivy Mansion and his beloved, and the excuses he wanted to make for Zacnaphane fell away.
This was his wife, his partner in everything, and this was his child, yet
he reminded himself that this drow, Zacnaphane, had willingly lain upon Matron Malice's sacrificial altar for the sake of Drizzt. Drizzt nodded. He didn't need to go to Catti Bree. He knew where his road lay, despite his misgivings.
He lifted a unicorn-shaped whistle hanging on a chain about his neck to his lips and blew it.
"Care to join me?" he asked his companion.
Ivanel's eyes widened as she looked past Drizzt, and he knew that Andahar, his magical unicorn steed, was on the way. Sure enough, he turned to see the shining white creature, its ivory horn gleaming in the morning light, as it took its last few strides toward him, each magical step amplifying its size beyond the mere closure of distance.
"No, I will stay here. But take great care," Ivanel warned, stepping away. "You have walked this road before, and you may be dealing with demonic forces."
Drizzt climbed up on Andahar and nodded.
"I will await your return," Ivanel promised,
and Drizzt turned the steed and leaped away down the south road at a full gallop. Behind him, Ivanel sat down and began to memorize a spell of windwalking, for despite what she'd said, she did intend to go with Drizzt, but he didn't need to know that. He sat in his own filth, back against a rough natural wall, hands extended up above his head and chained to the stone. They fed him only once, stuffing moldy bread into his mouth and nearly drowning him with buckets of water. That meal was on the first day of his captivity. Apparently the demons had come to believe that he wasn't worth much to them after all, and now were letting him starve. He should have withered and died, he figured. Or maybe they were counting on him to stay near death. Perhaps his story of a wizard cursing him with long life because of those long-ago events in Citadel Felbar was truer than he actually believed. It didn't matter. Curse or not, one thing sustained Athrogate at that time. He had to find his beloved. A flicker of distant light stung his eyes, and it took him a long while to open them. By that time, the torch was clear to see, as was the sturdy dwarf with yellow hair all braided into cornrows who was carrying it.
"So, dwarf, have you had enough?"
asked his jailer, who appeared to be a dwarf woman with rather thin arms but very wide shoulders. But the accent and sophistication of her speech sounded very undwarfish.
"Enough? Me belly's growling, so likely not."
"Very good," the jailer replied. "I do admire your courage in this hopeless time, although perhaps not so hopeless for you, if you tell me what brought you here, or rather who sent you here. I know enough to know if you're lying, be warned."
"Bwahaha!" Athrogate roared. "Ye think I'd be telling yourself the color of the dern sky, or the makings of a halfling pie, or a joke to make a baby cry, or an answer to who, what, when, or why?"
"Clever."
"Truth, ye dog. Ye let me out of these chains. Get yourself the best weapons ye can find, and come at meself, and me bare hands'll show ye more truth, eh?"
"I could hurt you."
"Better'n yourself have hurt me."
"Oh no, ugly creature. I could hurt you in ways you cannot imagine."
"Got meself a wild way of thinking of things,"
Athrogate assured her. The jailer stepped back, then conceded it all with a shrug. "Here then, let us see," she said. She reached behind her back and tossed an object into Athrogate's lap. Athrogate's eyes widened, and he let out a wail of the deepest agony he had ever known. "The pain has only begun," the jailer promised. She walked away, but Athrogate, staring at the object, wanting to throw it far aside and keep it in his view all at once, couldn't hear the dwarf woman over his own screaming. Screaming at the severed head of Amber Gristle O'Maul of the Adbar O'Malls.